all the great players I've had, all the great ones, guys that have, you know, been great college players or great NBA players, they love it. Like, they love the process of getting better. They love getting coached. They want to be coached. They want you to challenge them. They want the truth.
On this episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast, we are joined by Mark Gottfried, longtime Division I head coach and founder of the leadership platform, Get It Done. Coach Gottfried has spent decades in the game with coaching stops as an assistant at UCLA and with the Dallas Mavericks, while also holding head coaching stops at Murray State, Alabama, NC State, and Cal State Northridge. Throughout his career, he has built winning programs and developed a reputation as a strong leader and program builder. In this episode, we discuss the early experiences and mentors that helped shape his leadership style, the most common leadership challenges he sees when speaking to teams and organizations today, and the three core pillars he believes are essential for building a winning culture. Please welcome to the podcast, Mark Gottfried. Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines. Welcome back, everyone. There's some extra excitement in the room today for this one. This is a great opportunity. Alan Major, Doug Caputo here today. Another episode of the Rising Coaches podcast. We are joined with a former longtime Division I head coach, current speaker, man of many talents, as we all, man behind Get It Done, the leadership framework. Ladies and gentlemen, head coach Mark Gottfried. Coach Gottfried, welcome.
Well, that was a nice intro. Thank you, man. Sometimes I feel like I'm old and washed up and hung on the line. So you made me feel good. I like that.
Hey, man, we here at Rising Coaches, we know how to put people on a pedestal now. So you're in the right spot, brother.
Well, good. Glad to be here.
Yeah, thank you.
The best for the best. It's what we always like to say, the best for the best. Roll out the red carpet. And I mean, as soon as Mage was telling me, he goes, we got Coach Gottfried's interested. I'm like, that's everybody knows exactly the name. So regardless, thank you for being on here. I know there's some great things and a lot that we can dive into. One of which being, as I mentioned a little bit, you have a union behind the scenes before we hopped on here. You won a national championship as an assistant at UCLA. You led multiple Division I programs as a head coach and have done some absolutely like great things with those. But we always looking on the beginning, what were some early experiences in shape that leadership style that you ultimately have today?
Well, Doug, you know, I grew up around sports and coaching. My dad was a high school coach, then a Division III basketball coach. And his brother, my uncle Mike Gottfried, was a football coach at Pittsburgh and Kansas and Cincinnati. And then, you know, my cousins are Jim and John Harbaugh and their father, Jack and Jackie. And so, you know, we've just kind of been around it our whole lives. But I can remember, I always tell this story, and I was in the ninth grade. I think I was 14 or 15 years old, and my Uncle Mike was actually the football coach at Murray State. And I remember him putting about 100 guys in this big room. They had their pads on. They were getting ready to go out and play a football game. And he had them all holding hands, and they were singing this song called Love Lifted Me. And I remember sitting there, and I'd watch my dad coach and my uncle, but I remember that day going, wow, what an opportunity to impact people. Like I'm watching this, you know, in real time. So I was always excited about coaching. And then I got very, very, very lucky, And the opportunity came to start at UCLA. Jim Herrick had just got the job from Pepperdine, and he hired me as the graduate assistant. You know, I'm out there trying to figure things out. But it was a great break to put those four letters at that stage of my career. That was what a blessing that was for me.
Oh man. When did you, was there a point like, cause you know, a lot of people grow up with the fake doctor bags and they want to be doctors as kids, but then they see their first, you know, corpse, you know, and then you're like, you know what, let me try real estate. But like, when did you know that you knew, you know, was it like when you first jumped into it at UCLA, or was it like even before you did? Like, but you know, everybody kind of has that moment where you kind of really kind of know, like, yeah, this is it for me. This is what I'm supposed to be doing.
You know, Alan, I had an interesting thing happen. I had been drafted by the Pistons in 87 and got cut. And then I played with Athletes in Action, a Christian team, went all over the world. And then I got invited back. Back then, the Summer League was not in Vegas. It was at Loyola Marymount. And I got invited back as a free agent. Detroit signed me again. So I'm in L.A., and I'm playing in the Summer League at Loyola Marymount. And I go back to my hotel room, and this is before cell phones. You know, the red light is blinking on my phone there in my room, and I call and I go get the message. It's my mother called, and she said, this guy named Jim Herrick from UCLA is trying to reach you. And so here I am playing for the Pistons, and I got a taxi cab the next morning, and I just took off and went to UCLA, walked in and shook his hand. And he was like, wait a minute, what are you doing here? And I said, well, I'm in LA, the whole thing. And we talked, and this went on for a couple of weeks, but you know, he offered me a chance to start at UCLA. And here I am, a basketball guy, and loved it. I mean, my dad took me to the Final Fours when I was very young. I was there watching Bird and Magic in 79 in Salt Lake City. And
oh, my gosh. And
I watched all those. We were there, you know, because he was had access to tickets as a small college coach. But when Jim offered me that job, you know, to go and start a career at UCLA, that was a hard one to say no to. And then I got lucky too. You know, in coaching, you know, we all need a little bit of luck along the way, and you need somebody to believe in you. And after my first year, we had one of our assistants become a head coach, and Coach Herrick promoted me. Well, now, you know, I'm one of the three assistants. I'm like 25 years old. And then 2 years later, two guys the same year, Brad Holland and Tony Fuller, they both became head coaches. And so he promotes me again. And I'm like 27, and I'm supposed to go out and recruit in L.A. And I can't even figure out where the freeways are. And so the fact that he believed in me and gave me those chances, you know, it forever changed the course of my coaching career. So I'm always thankful for that. And but that's probably in those years, Alan, I started to really get excited about it and excited about coaching. You know, and then I'm going out to John Wooden's house and hanging out with him. I mean, come on. I mean, you couldn't ask for a better beginning for me as far as my coaching career started.
Yeah, I actually had a chance to go visit with Coach when he had that little apartment in Encino.
That's right.
And I went out there and I spent 3 hours of just like to this day, you know, and he treats you like you're the only person in the world. That's the thing that stuck with me. Like, I thought he's going to get in there and rush me out after 30 minutes. Mm-mm. Here's how we ended it. Mm-hmm. Alan, I'm very sorry, but my grandson is having a birthday party at one of these Chucky places. I said, Chucky Cheeses? He goes, yeah. And he goes, I promised my grandson I would go to his birthday party at Chuck E. Cheese's. So I'm sorry, we're going to have to stop around 11:30. Yeah, I got there at 8 in the morning.
That's great.
And we stopped at 11:30, but he's apologizing because he's got to stop. Because I'm like, this is, you know, but back to what you said, it's so important for, you know, what Coach Herrick did for you, kind of what we're supposed to do with players. Is we have to see things in them before they see it in themselves.
You know, Alan, something stood out to me too when I was at UCLA, and obviously those John Wooden opportunities, you know, we all have stories, but they're all the same, and that how gracious he was. I mean, you won't ever find anybody that has a different story because he was gracious to everybody. I mean, he was an amazing role model. But I tell you what stood out to me, one thing at UCLA, and you know, obviously we had a great run. And then in 95, that was my seventh year there. We won the title. But more importantly than that, how about this, Alan, you'll relate and Doug as well. The players from Pepperdine, the former players that had played at Pepperdine for Coach Herrick. Now, this was guys like Dane Suttle and Dwayne Polley and Levy Middlebrooks, all these guys that nobody's really ever heard of. But they were good players for Pepperdine, very, very good players. But while we coached at UCLA, all of those guys would come and sit in the office with us. Now, these were guys that he had coached before. And it made an impression on me that those players, they had such a good relationship with him. And he, you know, back and forth, and they were like part of his family, you know, those players that he coached. And that made an impact on me. I'm watching it, you know. And then, you know, I had come from Alabama to Los Angeles. I didn't know anybody in L.A. And for 7 years, at that time, my wife we spent every Thanksgiving and every Christmas day at his house with Jim Herrick, with his family, eating dinner, hanging out. And so that all of a sudden became, okay, you know, I'd watched it as a young person, but this is what coaching is all about. We all want to win. I mean, come on. We all love to win. We got competitive nature. But then outside of the winning, this is what it's all about. And so it made a great impression on me.
Mm. No, that's so good, man. I love that.
Learning those types of experience actually have, like, I don't know. I mean, I'm still young in the profession, but it's taught me a lot to just listening to people, being able to hear all this and realizing what the bigger picture really is. Yeah, like as you said, the winning is phenomenal. It's always good to hoist a trophy and have a ring on your finger. But after some years of being in the profession, you start to realize the relationships you build. And once they start coming back and calling you back, I know Mage has mentioned this, and it's starting to hit me a little bit more now. Once they start giving you those texting calls back, it just means so much more. And it's so much more gratifying.
It is, Doug. And you know, a couple of three or four teams I had at Alabama, you know, they've honored us at halftime. So we all go back and you're together. And all of a sudden, you know, now guys are in their 40s, mid 40s. And, you know, they're grown men, they're adults, they have families, they have careers. And all of a sudden, you know, they begin to really show how thankful they were. Like sometimes as a coach, you don't always know, you know, if you really had an impact or not. You know, sometimes you hope. But then you see these guys later, and it really kind of resonates. We had a thing this year, Alan, you'd love this. Both of you would, Doug. But two of my former players, Antoine Petway, is the head coach at Kennesaw State. They're in Conference USA. And Mo Williams, he's at Jackson State. And they decided to start a series. So they're playing each other this year in Atlanta. And both guys separately sent me text messages like, hey, coach, it'd be really nice if you could come to that game. So I flew back. And now I got two guys that are head Division I basketball coaches. And, you know, Mo walks out first and he comes over, and I have a new wife here the last couple of years. And she was amazed. Like when Mo walked over, the hug and the embrace, and she was like, whoa, like, wow. Like I didn't really understand all that. And then Antoine walks out, same thing, you know, all of a sudden this embrace. And so, when you're coaching, again, those are the kind of things as you get older that you start to say, all right, man, this was, I had an opportunity, hopefully, to really pour into somebody else, just like you poured it into me.
Well, and, you know, it's worth the wait, because it takes sometimes 5, 10, 15 years, right? Because sometimes they got to get older before you get smarter sometimes.
Right.
So, you know, and so, but case in point, like as we finish this pod today, Doug has taken a player to lunch. You know, I think he's a senior. Is he graduating, Dougie?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I took a guy out last night, one of our guys, a grad transfer guy that, you know, he's wrapping it up. And the sweetest part of it, you know, the waitress comes over and says, guys, we're closing in 5 minutes. Can I get you anything else? We're the last two people in the restaurant.
That's great. That's great.
But when you leave and they give you that right there. And yeah. It's so ideal that we're saying this, because the majority of the rising coaches crowd and people that listen to us are guys that, or trying to literally rise and take a step forward and advance in the profession. And we just always try to paint it in a way that it's great, you know, be ambitious, but don't be possessed by it. Right.
Yes.
And don't let it consume you so much that you don't smell the roses along the way and fully embrace yourself where you are, because what's going to come out of it is the very thing that we're talking about.
Yes.
Because players can feel when you're really present. No, and if you're not,
no doubt.
They know their antennas are too good.
Yeah. Alan, I had a fun one this year. Doug, I coached 3 years at Murray State, and I had a really good player named Isaac Spencer. He was actually Mr. Basketball in Alabama. And this was back when guys could be a Prop 48 where they could come to school and they couldn't practice, but you know, and we got him at Murray State. He was a really good player. Anyway, they retired his jersey this year at Murray State. So he wants me to come back. And so I go back in there and they put his jersey up there and you know, we're out there and, you know, he looked at me and he said, "Coach, I wouldn't be who I am today without you." I'm going to start crying here. I won't start crying. He said, "I wouldn't be who I am." And I looked right back and said, "Isaac, I wouldn't be who I am without you." I mean, it's,
that's right.
I mean,
oh, you know, man.
First year he played, we were 29-3 with wins over Iowa State and Arkansas. And, you know, I get the Alabama job. And so, you know, he's talking about how I made an impact on him, but I'm not where I am without him.
That's right.
It's one exactly of those.
Right. That's right.
Great moments in coaching. So I agree with you, Alan. When you're younger, sometimes I look back too, and you know, you're so consumed with winning. It's competitive. I mean, we all know how competitive coaching is. I mean, you know, and you feel the weight of it sometimes on you, you know, as a head coach and assistant coach. But I hope that, like, you guys are doing a great job with this, because you hope there's young coaches that they love what they're doing, but don't mistake it. It's not all about just winning. We all want to win, but it's not all about that. There's more to it.
Yeah, so true. So true.
This reminds me, a lot. I was just talking about this the other day, and it kind of all in all ties in a little bit, but I'm at the age and the point in life where you start to get, all your friends are starting to get married. They start to send all these wedding invitations out. And it's just like, it's one of those things where you love to hate the problem, right? Like, you get all these wedding invitations. You're like, "Oh man, this is great, but I got to stop having so many friends because these can be expensive." They start, but it's the same thing, because you get all these players, and especially for your case, I'm sure, you know, it sounds like everybody's inviting you back, and it's a great problem to have. Do not get me wrong, but it's one of those where you're like, "Man, this can be exhausting sometimes."
That's a sweet exhaustion.
You know, too, what's fun for me now, you know, I'm 62 years old, and I look back, I've been so blessed throughout the years. But sometimes, too, there's young coaches out there that I didn't coach that, you know, maybe I knew them when they were younger. I had one a couple weeks ago in the SEC. A young coach called me, and he's like, "Coach, my team is struggling, and, you know, we've lost some games, and the heads are down, and, you know, kind of any word of wisdom, any nugget, coach, you might throw my way that might help." And those for me too are fun, because now, you know, you're trying to help. You know, I'm trying to help somebody, and I'm rooting for everybody. Especially the guys you know and your friends with, and you know, some of these younger guys, I've watched them kind of grow up. And so that's a ton of fun for me as well.
Yeah, it's amazing. You kind of track the career of a coach, like when you're young, you're reaching up, right? And then when you're in that kind of middle range of your career, you're kind of reaching across and collaborating. And then as you get older, you're reaching down.
Alan, that's powerful.
That's what it should be about, right? But that's we've all been in those, you know, and you and I are kind of in the reaching down phase, which is why I enjoy doing this. And Doug is, I'm not saying Doug is a reacher. He's got the wingspan to be a reacher, but he's not he's understanding, you know, through this pod, like, it's the best of both worlds. He's ambitious, but this pod is probably, Doug, I'm speaking for you, giving you great perspective and balance. So you can kind of put that chasing in its right place, you know.
Alan, I'm going to ask you for your permission right here in the middle of the podcast, because when I speak all over at corporate, I'm speaking now everywhere at these corporate companies and events. But what you just said is so, you know, a lot of times we need an illustration to make something resonate. And it's so true when you're reaching up, reaching across, and reaching down as you get a bit later. And without your permission, I'm stealing that. So just let you know. Yeah.
Well, I just asked for 95% on the on the residuals. So, you know, that's all I'm, you know, that's all I'm asking for. Not too much, but if we can work that out, then we're all good.
Funny.
No, roll with it, brother. Roll with it. We're the biggest. Doug and I are the biggest hijackers out there. So you take that and run with it, man. But that's just what our, you know, the typical track of a career feels like.
You know, too, guys, in coaching, it's amazing how many people, and there's so many people. If we all look back on your careers, you know, Alan, so many people have either given you a wise word, they've helped you along the way. You know, if you really take a minute and look and think back on that. But coaching is such a great profession in that regard where, I mean, there's some turds out there. We all know that. But for the most part, coaches are, they want to give to other people. And, you know, and the best ones always do. And it's interesting. I live in Newport Beach, California. There's a high school team here, Corona Del Mar High School. And I've kind of adopted them. I go to all the games and I've got to know the kids and the parents and the coaches. And I'm just a fan. I sit up in the crowd. I'm just a fan. But, you know, a lot of times I'll take the young kids in high school. I'll go work them out and we'll get in the gym. And a couple of my buddies said, well, how much are you charging for that? And I said, charging? I wouldn't charge those kids. This is what we do. This is just what we do. It's part of, you know, I wouldn't charge anybody and have them pay me. I mean, I love getting in there and, you know, trying to help a young person. But that's another thing about this profession that's a little bit different than others, you know, in that coaching, we have such an opportunity to help one another. And nobody's really, they're not doing that to get paid. I mean, you're doing it because you love to do it. You know, you want to feel like you've helped somebody else on their journey along the way. And that's one of the great things I've always liked about coaching.
I was going to say, you just hit something that actually it truly resonates with me to this day. It is something that I'm like been fighting, and I know I am not going to be the only one who's listening to this or that this resonates with. You just said we don't do it for the money. I have been told before, there have been seasons in my previous years where, you know, as a college coach, I didn't see a dollar. And people are like, then why are you even doing this? And I'm like, I don't know how to explain it to you. I couldn't tell you why. It's too enjoyable. I spend too much time in it. And they're like, well, you put too much effort. I don't get home till 12 o'clock at night. And long story short, that right there is one of the most powerful things, because it's like, you're not doing it for the right reasons if you're looking for the money out of it. If you want the money, don't get me wrong. Yeah, everybody needs money nowadays. It's finances are a huge thing. You got bills to pay.
Yeah, but bless you.
That's not the reason.
You do it because that's just part of who you are and who we are. I mean, that's just, you know, what you do. My father, Joe Godfrey, he was the athletic director at the University of South Alabama for 29 years. Think of that, Division I athletic director. But, you know, he started in high school, small college, and he's 86 years old, and they brought back, how about this now? They brought back a team from 1977. Now, the first thing you have to say is, what took you so long? He goes back to Ohio, and he's with these guys, and these guys now are in their 70s. They're in their 70s. And he had the greatest time listening to the former players and him. And he always says, too, by the way, and Doug, this one is a good one for you. You know, he left there at Ashland College and went to Southern Illinois University way back in 1978 to 81. He was the head coach at SIU. But he always says the most fun he ever had in coaching, the most fun was it at a Division III school. That for him, that was the most fun. You know, the kids were there because they wanted to be there. You know, they had, you know, need-based aid. But those guys came to play. You know, they just wanted to play and continue their careers. And he had the most fun of his entire career at a Division III school. And that was always, you know, I didn't end up in that path, but that always has made me, you know, kind of admire sometimes the guys that aren't at that, you know, the Power Four conferences at Division I, because there's great coaches and great players and great people at every level. And we're all doing the same thing. We're all doing the same thing. Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter where you're coaching. We're all trying to do the same things.
Well, that's funny. I started at Cal Lutheran with Coach Dunlap in 1992. and Division III, and you know, we've had Division III coaches on here, and it's such a beautiful contrast because, again, especially now in this era, we're in a, play to pay, pay to play. Mm-hmm. So, all the NIL guys are getting paid to play. Yeah. All the D3 guys are paying to play. So it's completely flipped. But like, what a beautiful thing, because those guys, and I remember, I mean, I helped assist me and another guy had 7 players on the JV team. And we'd work with them in the morning, then we'd come back with the big team in the afternoon. I remember the bus rides and, stopping at Carl's Jr. after the game and getting burgers, for everybody on the way back from driving from Redlands or Whittier or, Pomona Pizza, or all these places. Oh, man. And still in touch with some of those guys. A lot of those guys have gotten into coaching and, they're living their lives. And, like Doug said earlier, I mean, when you watch them grow up, you probably can't see right there, but that's
what it's all about.
If there were words, we could come up with them, but there aren't any. So that's what makes it so beautiful. Some things aren't supposed to be described.
That's right.
So, Coach, you said this earlier, and I want to make sure to circle back on it because it's something that you're doing now, and I'd like to at least highlight that a little bit. As we said, you're a speaker, you're a consultant, you're the person who is working with to get it done, and then the leadership framework that you guys have. So you speak to organizations now. I know you speak to teams at all different levels and give them some different leadership challenges, ideas, and kind of coach them, ultimately coaching the coaches. Talk on that a little bit. Some of the most common leadership challenges you see across teams, so people who are head coaches, what are some of the challenges and some of the things that maybe you're working with those coaches on for leadership?
Well, first of all, I think this is important because I don't care what walk of life you're in. Complacency, life settles in. Sometimes, people lose that fire just a little bit. And it doesn't matter if they're a salesman for a company or an assistant coach, or doesn't matter. It's human nature. Life gets busy, life gets hard, kids, challenges, all those things. And so a lot of time for me, it's kind of real. It's the same thing we do in coaching. You're trying to reawaken that kind of spirit in every player or every person. And you're trying to, or I try to get them to rise up and be the absolute best version of themselves. And, when I speak, we kind of break it down into grit and integrity and desire. And guys, I'm pretty vulnerable when I speak to companies, and I've made mistakes. I've had some massive ones in my life. We all have. Sometimes, when you're in coaching, your mistakes end up on the front page of the paper and in USA Today. And other people have mistakes. Nobody knows about them. They just go home.
That's right.
But, part of that, too, is owning them. You got to own them. And you can't blame everybody else. And, if you put your foot in a bear trap, you put your foot in a bear trap, and you got to say, hey, that's my fault. And can't blame everybody. So we talk a lot about integrity. I talk a lot about desire and even just grit, developing grit and how to develop grit and how to challenge yourself every day. And so it doesn't matter. I've spoken to, Wyndham Hotels annual kickoff meeting in Orlando, to a tech company in Boston. And what you find is the same thing that we find. It's the same thing. And, we're trying to motivate and not just give somebody a rah-rah speech, but then also give them the tools. Like, how do you develop this? And what happens if your moral compass has been shattered a bit with integrity? How do you put it back together? And then also, for all of us, and we've all done this, I tell people, I have been in every type of home there is. I don't care if it's the wealthiest or the poorest. I've been in city schools and country schools. I've been private, public. I've been in the U.S. and foreign. It doesn't matter. I've driven down red clay roads in the deep south to a cinder block house. I've stood on the corner at Martin Luther King and Malcolm X Boulevard in Harlem trying to get a kid out of Rice High School. And so, but even after all that, it still comes down to the same thing sometimes. It's, and I say this, and we've all done it as coaches. you get a player and you say, well, you know, do you want to become a great player? And they all say yes. Oh, yeah, coach, I want to become a great player. But then the second follow-up question is, well, then how much do you really love it? Do you really love what you're doing? Because if you really love what you're doing, then the love of what you're doing pushes through all your difficult days. You know, those days, the days when you're not very good. We're all going to have them. The days you got no zip. You just got no zip for a while and you're in a bad place or a slump. But if you love what you do, somehow you keep starting to, the cream continues to rise to the top. And so I've had a good time doing it. I love doing it. And then, you know, like all of us, you know, I've had 35 years of stories that I can leverage against all of those lessons, whether you're talking about grit and desire and whatever it may be. And so there's so many experiences that we've come across in coaching. And but that's why I'm excited about it, because I feel like I have a chance to impact people. And, you know, they may never have picked up a basketball in their entire lives, but there's an opportunity there to help.
Yeah, no, that's so good, man. The parallels between the sports and business world are endless, right? I mean, you know, we wear a logo, and they got a logo. So their logo may be Starbucks, but it's a logo. Mm-hmm. And teams have to operate a certain way. You know, cultures have to operate a certain way. You got to have a certain feel in your building, yep. Right? You can walk into a certain building, whether it's an athletic facility or a company, you can feel when it's right. When something special is going on, you can feel it. And so, and they deal with it too. They have egos, but they have to submit their ego for the logo,
yep.
You know? And so it's all, the connections are just endless. So it's so cool that you're doing this, man, because, yep. You know, like you said, the parallels and the lanes aren't that far apart between the two worlds.
And just like, you know, everybody in life, you know, they've got to come to a place where you got to make a decision whether you're going to get it done or not. And sometimes it's just, you know, it's that mental decision. I am going to get this done. I will get it done. And, you know, I tell a great story too. I had an opportunity on three different occasions to travel to Iraq, and this was in the early 2000s. And there was a bunch of coaches through the USO and Tom Izzo, Bobby Kremins and Rick Barnes and Dave Odom. And there was a bunch of us on three different trips. We had a great time, but I can remember this one trip, and we were prior to us getting on the plane to fly over to Iraq. They took us to Walter Reed Medical Center in Bethesda, Maryland. And that's where our men and women, you know, in combat come when they've had real severe injuries. And, you know, they just wanted us to go and interact with some of these young men and women who've been injured. And Jay Billis, you know, who obviously everybody knows Jay on ESPN and great friend. And we were together. We're walking down the hallway there, and we turn the corner and we go into this room, and there's a young man sitting there, guys. He is 19 years old. He's our only, we have had one quadruple amputee survive. So both legs, both arms. He was driving a Humvee. They stopped. There was a bomb underneath the Humvee. It exploded, and, you know, everybody else in the car died, and they were able to save him. But what was interesting, that Jay and I, we walk in this room in Bethesda, Maryland at Walter Reed, and we walk up to this young guy. His name is Brendan Morocco, and he's sitting there in the bed, guys, and this guy's got a smile on his face. He's got a pencil wedge between his kind of what was left of his arm. And he told Jay and I, I'm going to learn how to write my name with the pencil kind of lodged here. Now, this kid is sitting there in the bed. He's 19 years old. He's got no arms and no legs. And I remember walking out of there. Jay and I both did. And we were both in tears. Now, we walked out of that room. You know, hey, and I'm going to complain one day. Like, I'm actually going to complain about something. Oh, because my day's not going real well. Oh, because, you know, whatever. And blah, 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 blah. It's like, I don't think I need to be complaining, guys. I really don't. You know, it's all about perspective, and it's all about, you know, where you are in your lives. And so all walks of life, I don't care if we're in coaching or whatever we are, all of us need encouragement. All of us need somebody to help us a little bit. along our way. And so, but that one resonated with me, guys, way back 20 years ago. Yep.
Wow. No, that's
that story.
Yeah. You put,
that's one of those stories that you don't necessarily, not everybody gets the opportunity to be able to see something like that. And that sounds like, and I'm sure it is, it's eye opening. And I bet you, were you still coaching at the time? Did you say?
I was coaching at Alabama. And the other interesting part of that story, when we got to Iraq, we're sitting in this little room one night where we were staying on the base. We always stayed on the base. And a surgeon walked in, and I'm just sitting there talking with him. We're just kind of shooting the breeze. And I said, yeah, I bet you've seen some tough stuff. How about this one? And the guy said, well, the toughest one is when I had to save this guy's life with both arms and both legs. It was the actual surgeon that, to save his life, they had to amputate all four limbs. And I'm sitting with this guy, you know, a week or two after, I don't know when it was, but it was the craziest thing. It's the craziest thing. And so again, the impact that, you know, others have had on us, hopefully then we can share those to inspire each other.
Yeah, amen, brother. Reach down.
He said one word, and that encompasses everything you said, is the perspective, just the way you see things on a day to day. And I'm sure the reason I asked, you said you were still at Alabama when you saw all this. I bet you those next couple of weeks after, those practices were hell, but in a good way, because you probably push these guys. Oh, do you really think you have it bad? You know, you had some ammo.
You're actually tired right now. Come
yeah.
on.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you are, the world doesn't need to know about it.
No, not at all.
Oh man, love it.
I love that. Well, I want to ask too, on the leadership side, because I think that's something that's so pivotal. And since we're kind of still talking on it, just, there were three pillars I saw that you had for leadership, and correct me if I'm wrong, but grit, integrity, and desire. Can you talk a little bit about those, like, core traits and why? One, you know, how you can implement those as a coach, but then just really, like, what those do to help programs. And I'll reiterate them just for everybody, grit, integrity, and desire. If you could talk on those.
Well, you know, when you talk, there's so much more, obviously, but we kind of break it into those three, or I do. But, you know, when you talk about grit, think about this. And you guys, everybody who's been in sports sees this one pretty clear, but you know, I had this phrase when I coached all the time called play through. You just got to play through. And really, life is about playing through. If you think about it, play through everything. I used to tell our guys, you know, you got to play through the fact your girlfriend broke up with you last night. You got to play through the officials who might miss a lot of calls. You got to play through me, because I'm going to lose my temper at some point and I'm going to go off on you. And you got to be able to play through that. You got to play through the fact that the bus broke down. You got to play through the fact that, you know, we had a bad meal. But the mindset of just playing through everything, I got to play through. And I tell the story, I was coaching at Alabama and we had a game at Kentucky. It was a noon tip on a Saturday, and Friday night we fly from Alabama up there, and the pilot can't land the plane because there was a snowstorm hit Lexington. And so he decides to land the plane in Louisville. Well, there's snow everywhere. We land in Louisville. It's 9 o'clock at night. We're a 3-hour drive away from Lexington, and the bus has got to come from Lexington to Louisville to pick us up before we can head back to Lexington. We roll into Lexington about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning on a noon tip. Now, I had Mo Williams was my point guard, and he was a pretty good player, but the whole thing then was play through. You got to keep playing through. And they understood it. Our players understood it. And at that point, you know, we went in there and beat them. And they were a top 5 team in the country. And so that whole play through mentality, we talk a lot about that. And, you know, I've mentioned a little bit about the integrity and being authentic and being real. And so, you know, a lot, you know, when we talk about integrity, and Alan, you mentioned earlier about, you know, your conversations with John Wooden that were priceless, I'm sure, for you. They're amazing. But I can remember this one morning, I'm at his house, and it was probably 8:30, 9 o'clock in the morning. And you've been there, Alan. You sit there and he's sitting at his desk and I'm sitting on the couch, and, you know, we're probably 5 or 6 feet apart, and, you know, we're just talking about all sorts of things. And it was an interesting morning. He had a grandfather clock and the clock was ticking and it was very quiet. And I tell the story. It was like this magical morning in that the window was to my right and the sun was shining through the window. And so like this big beam of light is coming through and it's kind of in between Coach and I. And I can hear the clock over there tick, tick. You know, it's crazy, one of those. And for whatever reason, that morning, you know, he always had these amazing words of wisdom that, you know, we all experienced when we were with Coach Wooden. But he looked right at me and he said, Mark, I hope you never forget this. He said, the softest pillow in the world is a clear conscience. And I can remember sitting there like thinking about it. And, you know, there were times in my coaching career where I think I sacrificed my integrity. I wanted to win so bad. You know, you want to compete. But always in the back of my mind, that quote, it just never left me. You know, and it is amazing how soft that pillow is every night when you have a clear conscience. It was such a great analogy. And so, you know, I talk a lot about that when I speak to groups and, you know, hopefully holding on and making sure your integrity is intact. And then, you know, obviously desire. I mean, you got to love what you do, man. You just got to love it. If you don't love it, you need to get out. You need to go do something else. And, you know, the love, all the great players I've had, all the great ones, guys that have, you know, been great college players or great NBA players, they love it. Like they love the process of getting better. They love getting coached. They want to be coached. They want you to challenge them. They want the truth. You know, that the truth is what helps us improve. And the great ones want the truth. They want it. And they want it because they love it. Like they love and they love the process of becoming great. So anyway, we kind of dive into the grit, integrity, desire. And I think for all of us in coaching, you know, we can relate because it's every day and you're dealing with young people every single day. And so hopefully when I have a chance to do that, you know, I am helping other people along the way.
Yeah, no, absolutely, man. What what I love about it is sometimes in, you know, depending on the company or a certain field, and you said it earlier, like you can maybe work somewhere for 30 years and be average and no problem. And, you know, Sundance your way right into retirement and no big deal. Part of the labor of love that we've chosen is you don't get the option of being average. Because if you're not, then you don't get to do it very long. So our whole deal is chasing being special. You know,
how about this, Alan? Think of this now for all of us in coaching too. And I used to tell this to our team all the time. Like sometimes we don't realize this, but you do understand, like even your players, I would tell our players, you understand you're being evaluated every day. Like I'm evaluating you every minute of every, I'm watching everything you do. I'm watching you in the locker room. I'm watching you on the court. I'm watching you interact with your players. I'm watching you on campus. I'm watching you. You're getting evaluated. But here's what you got to remember. I'm getting evaluated. I'm getting evaluated by my athletic director. And then you know, my athletic director is getting evaluated by the president. And the president's getting evaluated by the board. Like we're all getting evaluated. That's part of life. Now, you can't run from it. You cannot run from that. We're all getting evaluated every day in everything we do. Therefore, I want to be the best I can be. I don't want to compare myself to somebody else. I just want to, am I being the best I can be? And then the next part about it, when I speak to groups everywhere and I kind of close up a lot of my speeches, none of all this is possible. Like none. You could throw it all out the window unless you have self-honesty. And we've all coached now. So we've had players and other coaches and assistants and everybody that they struggle with that. Like, you have to be honest with yourself. Like, did I really work as hard as I can today? Did I prepare the best scout? Did I help my guys in practice? Did I, you know, whatever it might be, you know? And human nature, again, has this way of kind of convincing ourselves in our mind, like, yeah, I really did work hard today. But yeah. You know, your gut, you really didn't. And so
right.
self-honesty. Without it, there's nothing. Yeah. You cannot get better, and you will not get better. You will not improve without it.
Yeah. So true, man. Love it.
Every time we get the opportunity to talk to somebody, it always somehow comes back, especially people who have been in the head coaching position. It always circles back to the self-evaluation. It always circles back to the individual looking in the mirror, you know, because, and I know we say it on here all the time, but there's a reason we say it on here all the time. It's not necessarily the assistant's fault for doing something wrong. Maybe it's the head coach for guiding them the wrong way. And it's not always the head coach's fault. Don't get me wrong. But what I'm saying is it all starts from the top and trickles down. It's a ripple effect. So you just highlighted that in one of the biggest ways. That is phenomenal.
Oh, man. No. Now what I love is, you know, when you talk about people got to love it, right? Like some people want to be motivated, but it's inspiration that lasts, right? Motivation is one thing. But that's like eating a Snickers or drinking a Coke, right? Like that's gonna wear off in a little bit. The motivation is, you know, that's a quick fix. But inspiration lasts because inspiration is internal. Because you're not getting it from somewhere else. So that's the difference between the two. So like the people you talk about with desire, those are inspired individuals because their love for it. You know, we were at Ohio State. And one of the things we wanted to do is bring guys in that love the game because it's a 52,000 student campus. It's a city within a city. And if you didn't have guys that could control their own rudder when they were away from the building, the 21 hours when they weren't with us, they weren't going to make it. They weren't going to make it because there's just too much going on. But the guys that love the game, when God forbid they would ever let anything get in the way of them doing what they love. So the academics gets handled because they love the game. They're on time because they love the game. Yeah. You know, they're great teammates because they love the game. And they, you know, when they want to, they're competitive, highly competitive because they love the game. So all that, what you said about loving the game and, you know, when people love what they do, it's hard to ask them to do too much.
You're right. 100%. 100% correct.
Well, Coach, one of the last things I really wanted to throw in before we wrap it up is just, I know we were speaking before and you have something coming up here soon. It's Get It Done, another version. I know you have one book, but this is more of like a playbook style coming out called Get It Done. I don't know if you wanted to talk on that.
Well, I'm excited because, you know, I've thought about it for a long time, but I jumped in, you know, and said, let's do this. And so I wrote a book. The book is completed. It'll be out probably, I'm going to say, maybe mid-April, maybe 1st of May. We'll see if they hopefully get it a little sooner. But it's not a memoir of my career. And, you know, I'm smart enough to realize nobody really cares about that. But what I've tried to do is to, you know, take those lessons that I've learned and been fortunate to learn and leverage those into, you know, stories and things that can help people, you know, tools that can help people. And, you know, one of the things too, and, you know, I apologize because I tell too many stories when you get older, but, you know, part of when I talk and part of the book is kind of where this GID in my mind kind of originated from. And I'm going to tell you guys this story. 2004, I'm at Alabama. I'm the head coach. And we're in the 8 seed versus 9 seed game in the NCAA tournament. We were the last team, by the way, when they put the names on the brackets on Selection Show Sunday. We were 16-12. How about that one? 16-12, but we had played the number one strength of schedule. So in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, at least we got that, you know, in our favor, and maybe that'll get us in. So they announce our team, last team called, we get in. And then you're in the booby prize game when you're 8 seed versus 9 seed. Because if you win that game, you got to play the 1 seed. So the 8-9 seed is the seed where, hey, you're invited to the party, but you're probably not going to stay very long, but you did get invited.
Yeah, yeah. And you're paying for everything.
Seattle, and we had to play Stanford that year. They were 30-1. They were number one team in the country. Halftime, we're down 39-36. Start the second half, and we got a little pep in the step now. We got a little, you know, we're feeling, okay, we're down 3. We're playing pretty well, and they were good too. You know, they had a really nice team. And we come out and start the second half, and we missed our first 17 shots, 0 for 17. We couldn't make a shot, and we're down 10, timeout. Guys come to the bench, and I remember in that timeout telling the guys that, guys, we can get on the plane and head back to Tuscaloosa. I mean, this was a second-round game. We're playing Stanford, and I said, you know, you can hang your head high. I mean, nobody expects you to beat Stanford. So you shouldn't even be ashamed about it. Or the better choice is right now, this is what I call a GID moment. This is your GID moment in your life right now that we're going to find a way to get it done. We're going to have more enthusiasm than you've ever had in your life. We're going to come together. Everybody's going to play their role more than you ever have in your life. Everybody on this bench is going to be up cheered. I don't care what happens. We got that. The huddle was so tight. We were all huddled in there. And it was just about GID. And they came out of the timeout. And our players, I could hear them. You know, they walked about 5 feet away from me. They huddled up amongst themselves, the five guys. And I could hear them saying, guys, this is GID. We're getting this done. This is a get it done. And they kept saying it over and over. And I kept thinking to myself, man, they kind of got it. Like they got it. And we came out and went on a tear. And we ended up beating Stanford, knocked them out of the tournament. They were the number one team in the country. But in the book, you know, it's stories like that that I hope people then can grab onto those stories, and it'll resonate in a way where they have now a playbook and they have lessons that can help them in their own journey along their own path, whatever that path might be. So I'm excited about the book. Thank you for bringing it up. And it's going to be, hopefully it's going to be something that can really help people.
Well, you got two readers right here, so yep. You know there'll be a lot more than us, but you got two in the bank, buddy. So
thank you.
We're looking forward to it, man. And before Doug lands a plane, like, first of all, just great to reconnect with you again, man. It's been a long time, and I'm just so thrilled that number one you could do this, but I'm also so thrilled that you have channeled your competitiveness into something that is also service as well. And so awesome, man, just the what you shared, and hopefully you get to cross paths here at some point. Hoping to stay on the West Coast, but time will tell. So yeah, we'll see.
Well, you guys are doing a great thing, and for young coaches, or all coaches of all ages, but I think especially young guys, you know, making sure they have a real handle, you know, on what this profession is all about. Because you know, I tell people all the time, this is a great profession, coaching is. You know, sometimes it's a bad business, but it is a great profession. And it's one that we've all chosen to do, and we love what we do. We've loved it.
Yeah. No doubt. Two things can be true.
Yep.
You know, two things can be true. Yep. So well said, brother.
Thank you.
Well said.
Well, Coach, we always say gratitude is one of the biggest things, and especially for us, thank you again for just giving us some time to be able to hop on here. I mean, learn from you, talk with you. It's been a phenomenal, 50 some minutes. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure there's a lot more stories that you can dive into. But like I said, we're gratitude, truly, truly grateful to be able to have this.
Well, thank you, guys. Thank you for having me on. This has been my treat. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you got it, brother.
And all of you out there, thank you all for tuning in. As always, another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. Your hosts, Alan Major, Doug Caputo. And again, keep working, keep rising, coaches. We'll see you all soon.
Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines.
I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together. We'll